We'll hear arguments next in 76-398, Citizens and Southern National Bank against Bugas. Humphreys, you may proceed when you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court, my name is William Humphreys, and I represent the petitioner in this case, the Citizens and Southern National Bank. The case arises out of Title 12, Section 94 of the United States Code, which is known as the National Bank Venue Act. And the case involves the application and interpretation of that bank venue provision. The interpretation of that statute requires this Court to decide whether the statute requires that a national bank only be sued in its home county, that is, the county which is specified in its certificate of organization. A second issue that must be decided by the Court in order for any decision on the merits as to the interpretation of the statute to be rendered meaningful is whether a national bank may waive the provisions of Title Section 94 by the establishment of a branch bank in a county other than a county where it is chartered. Those are the two issues presented by this petition to the Court.
As a matter of fact, in how many Georgia counties does the CNS have banks?
Your Honor, that fact is not in the record, but I will frankly concede that CNS has branches in many counties in Georgia.
In many counties?
Yes, sir. That is not disputed. And in fact, in the instant case, the record shows that we did have a branch in DeKalb County where this suit was brought. That is not our home office. Our home office, specified in the certificate of organization, is in Chatham County, Georgia.
So you're taking the position that even though you have a branch in DeKalb County, that suit may not be brought there if it is not on a transaction arising out of, well, may not be brought there, period.
That is correct, Your Honor.
It has to go to Savannah.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And even though the volumes, so supposing someone brought suit against you in Fulton County, Atlanta, and the volume of business done by CNS in Fulton County was 20 times what it was in Savannah, you would still say they had to go to Savannah to sue you?
That is correct, Your Honor. If the venue was waived by the bank in that particular case, or raised, excuse me, then it would be required to be sued in Savannah, its home county.
You say home office? Is that?
Yes, sir. It's the county specified in its charter.
Well, I mean,
is the word.
Is that synonymous with registered office?
Well, with registered.
In my state, a corporation has to recite in its certificate of incorporation
the location
of its registered office.
Yes, it's a little bit different with regard to national banks. They're obviously federally chartered, and there's not the registration that goes on with state corporations. Rather, there is a certificate of organization, and in that certificate of organization, there is a place specified, and it is that place that we contend is the home county. That is the place specified in the certificate of organization.
Is it wholly within the discretion of the bank to select any county within the state that it has a bank at to be that certified place?
Well, at the time the bank is initially chartered, then the answer to your question is yes. When they are chartered, they will select a place that is to be their home office. And then there's very strict provisions that home office, for example, cannot be moved during the lifetime of the bank over 50 miles. So that even if, as I understand it, if you select County A, you cannot move that county, your principal office, over 50 miles, period. You can move it 50 miles with the permission of the Comptroller of the Currency, but as I read, I believe it's 12 United States Code, Section 30, you may not move it over 50 miles, period.
Are there any substantive requirements in connection with the principal office? Do you have to hold your directors' meetings there, or is it just purely a venue provision?
No, Your Honor. There are approximately, when I went through and counted, at least 7 or 8 statutes that talk about activities and duties that must be conducted where you are located.
Well, what about the maintenance of records? Isn't there a requirement that certain records be maintained at the principal or charter place of business?
Your Honor, I am not aware that there's any specific statute in existence now that requires that the records be maintained only at that one office.
How about regulations of the Comptroller General?
Your Honor, there may be. There may be a regulation such as that. I'm sorry, I do not know of any. I don't find any specific statutory authority. There may be certain records. But generally, the bank can, of course, now conduct business not only at its main office, but at its branches.
There are some statutes that require at the home office the conduct of some kinds of business. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
What kinds?
Well, for example, one very important statute, I believe, governs the amount of reserves that must be maintained with the Federal Reserve Bank. And this statute requires that if you are located in a Federal Reserve city, that you will maintain so many percentage of reserves. If you are not located in a reserve city, the reserve requirements are less. This will be found in 12 United States Code 142.
Is that why you're in Savannah and not Atlanta?
No, Your Honor. The reason we're in Savannah is because years ago, we in fact were started in Savannah.
Has this bank, has the CNS ever itself used the courts of DeKalb County?
Again, that's not in the record, but yes, sir.
You're
I'm
sure
certain that we have.
It must be.
I'm certain that we have.
Mr. Humphreys, may I ask you two questions in this reserve
yes,
calculation? I take it reserves throughout the bank, all of the bank's branches are counted in calculating the reserves.
I would presume so, as long as they were part of the same bank.
Is there anything in the statute, and my second question is, that would preclude you from closing your banking activities in Savannah but retaining your office for directors' meetings and the like there? Now, do also, say you decide to do all your banking in Atlanta but keep your home office in Savannah. Could you do that?
I'm reluctant. I do not know the answer to that question. I will add that with regard to the requirement that it be moved 50 miles, that it can only be moved 50 miles, period, and even then only with the comptroller's permission, I am told as an anecdote that at one point in time there was thought of trying to move the office from Chatham County to Atlanta, and someone suggested they could only do it at about 50 miles a week, so that they would move 50 miles 1 week and 50 miles the next. But clearly
because that only relates to moving the home office. That isn't relevant to the question whether they could discontinue banking.
No, sir. I do not know whether if they could discontinue banking activities. I believe this would probably depend to some extent on the answer to Mr. The Chief Justice's argument, which I am unable to answer, and that is, must there be some records? Must there be a physical place that continues to be maintained in the home county? And there may be some regulations requiring that.
What imposed on branching in under Georgia law?
Your Honor, we have opened up branching somewhat, and I believe it's now a grandfather situation. We can pretty much go, we can merge with, and I believe this court considered the effects of that, what used to be 5% banks. And I believe now we have statewide branch banks in Georgia. It's not a grandfather situation.
Did Georgia ever have a situation that I understand prevails in some states in which no branches were allowed, whatever. Perhaps no branches beyond the county in which the home office is located.
Oh yes, Your Honor. We did have that law at one time. The Georgia banking law has gone through several phases, and I'm confident that law did exist at one point, because that's why we used to have grandfather or 5% banks, where the bank would go and could only own 5% of banks in other counties. So we did have that at one point in time.
But now, so far as the law is concerned, your bank could have a branch in every county in Georgia.
That is correct.
Yeah, that's 100 and some. How many counties in Georgia now?
I do not know how many counties, I'm sorry, so that Georgia has, but it's a large number of counties, and the bank will undoubtedly have branches in those counties where it is profitable to open up an office or have a branch.
You're going to tell us what your justification for opposing this venue is, aren't you?
Yes, Your Honor. It involves basically the meaning of two words in 12 U.S.C. Section 94.
Is that all? Just the statute? There isn't any policy justification?
No, Your Honor. If this statute was being presented to be written by Congress today, there is probably no policy argument for not writing a statute that would allow a branch, a bank, to be sued at any place it had a branch for cause of actions arising out of the business activities conducted at that branch. I do not believe there would probably be a very good policy argument for not giving the bank the same wide venue that a corporation had. 12 U.S.C. 94 contains two basic provisions. One is a federal provision and one is a state provision. The federal provision says simply that a bank may be sued in any county or in any federal court in any district in which the bank is established. And the state court provision provides that a bank, and for state court purposes, may be sued in any state, municipal, county court in the county in which it is located. And these two provisions were enacted, one in 1863, the federal court provision, and one in 1864, the state court provision. Now, the Georgia Court of Appeals decided that since Congress had used a different word, located, in describing the venue for national banks than it did when it described the venue for national banks, which was, connected to the word established, and that therefore Congress must have intended for located to have a different meaning, a broader meaning than the word established. And therefore, Congress must have intended for banks to be sued in every county in which they were located.
But were there any branch banks in 1864?
No, Your Honor, there were not any branch banks in 1864.
How do you derive that intention of Congress?
Well, I do not. I am not arguing for that. I believe the Georgia Court of Appeals, as in other courts, state courts are trying to find ways to expand their venue. That's always been the case. And they looked at the dictionary, not the Georgia Court of Appeals, but the Security Mills versus Wachovia case in North Carolina, took a run through the dictionary to look at the various words and definitions of locate and establish. This is not a very fruitful task because one of the synonymous meanings or synonyms for locate is to establish. So having done that, to still give them opposite meanings does not make a lot of sense. And that's particularly true in light of the conditions that existed in 1863. As we've said, there were not branch banks in 1863. A bank could only do business in one place, the county in which its certificate of organization was issued. But more importantly, the jurisdiction of the state and federal courts in 1863 and 1864 was concurrent with regard to national banks. And this, to me, is very important in deciding whether located and established mean the same thing. Because until 1882, any suit against a national bank could be brought in the first instance in federal court without regard to diversity and without regard to amount involved. Similarly, any suit brought in a state court could also be removed to a federal court since the federal courts had concurrent and original jurisdiction. And therefore, it seems to me that the argument becomes even more untenable that a federal court that Congress intended for state courts to have a broader venue and to permit suits in more state courts than in federal courts with this concurrent jurisdiction. And the same really holds true today because if a diversity suit, were brought in Georgia in a branch in a place other than where the bank was established, the bank could remove that case to federal court. And the federal courts are clearly unanimous in holding that the word established refers only to the place specified in the bank's certificate of organization.
Why can the bank remove in a situation like that?
Well, it would have to be a diversity case, Your Honor. It would have to be a New York citizen suing a bank in Georgia and, for example, bringing suit in Atlanta. That would not work with two Georgia citizens such as we have here.
Since
1882. Now, prior to 1882, you'd have the same result. You would remove, and then you could end up back in the county where you started, or rather have the case dismissed if you removed from federal court to state court to federal court. So I submit that the first argument or consideration that should not control in this case is any consideration that the word located and established have different meanings as used by Congress in 1863 and 1864. Whatever interpretation is given to the word located in this case, and this is clearly a state court case. It is not, does not arise in the federal courts. But whatever interpretation this court gives to the word located, it also must give to the word established. And it is clear, as we've, I think, mentioned briefly before, that located and established, when used in 1863 and 1864, referred only to one place. There was only one place in existence at 1863 and 1864, and that was the place that that the bank was chartered. Furthermore, if you read the language of Section 94 carefully, it is very apparent that although Congress might have mingled the words located and established, it was very particular as to when it intended to denote a potential plurality and when it intended to mean the singular. And thus, the statute provides that the suit may be brought in any district or territorial court of the United States. And it further provides that the suit may be maintained in any state, county, or municipal court. There is a potential plurality of courts that I believe could be found from that language. On the other hand, Congress was quite explicit that it could only be maintained in the district, the one district, I would suggest, in which the bank was established, and in the one city or county in which the bank was located.
As I have, does the Langdo case help you much, or hurt you, or is it kind of neutral?
The Langdo case helps more than it hurts, but is not determinative of the issue. In Langdow, the court was concerned with whether 12 U.S.C. 94 was permissive or mandatory. That was the only issue.
Whether it prevailed over a state.
That's right. That's right. Whether it could be not waived, but whether it had to be applied, or whether it just was something that could be applied. And it held that it had to be applied.
But there was no question there about where the bank was.
There was no question about where the bank was, although the court did say that to hold that the statute was merely permissive rather than mandatory would render meaningless a congressional enactment permitting suits in the bank's home county. Now, that's an exact quote from Mercantile. They coined the phrase home county, the court in Mercantile. This court, really for 103 years, beginning back in 1871 with Bank of Bethel and going really down through 1976 in the Radzenhauer case, has never intimated, and it has had many opportunities, that located and established referred to any place other than the one place that is the place in the certificate of organization. For 40 years, the federal courts, ever since the Leonardi case, which was decided by the Second Circuit in 1936, for 40 years, the federal courts have been unanimous in holding that established is determined by the place specified in the bank certificate of organization, and that once that decision is made, there is no need to go further to determine where venue properly lies in a suit against a bank. Most courts, most even state courts in this day, have recognized that located and established do in fact mean not only the same thing, but that they refer only to the county specified in the certificate of incorporation, or rather the certificate of organization.
Do you have any idea when this statute was passed how many states had more than one federal district?
Your Honor, I have made diligent search to try to find out this potential plurality question on district and territorial. As the statute was initially enacted, it provided that it could be brought in any circuit, district, or territorial courts. Clearly, I believe in 1863 there still were circuit courts that had primary or trial court jurisdiction. I have not been able to. The court system was very complicated in 1863. I am unable to say that there was a state that had a district or a territory. I do know that back in 1863, when you write in the alternative of circuit, district, or territorial court, I feel that there must have been some overlapping. And even if we can't, or I can't.
Now, but was there a state that had more than one circuit court, for example?
Your Honor, I'm unable to answer.
Or having more than one district court?
There were states with more than one district court.
I know that there was a district court. I know there were district courts that would encompass two states. I know that. In other words, a district court might cover two states.
How about more than one in one state? Judges
I do not know. I have chiefs. The treatise is on the court system in 1863. I have tried to go through, and it's a very tedious task. The system was very complicated back then, and I'm extremely sorry, Your Honor. I simply cannot respond to that.
I suspect you could find it in the front pages of 35 Federal.
Well, Your Honor, I think not. It is very complicated. I will go back and undertake that, but we have tried diligently so that I could definitely say that State X had a district and a circuit court in it, and therefore there was a reason for that potential plurality. But I would suggest that my ignorance is not that damning to my argument, because my point is that even if there was a potential plurality, just the chance of more than one, Congress used the word any. Really, whether there were more than one or not, I don't know. But if there was a chance that there was more than one court in which this case could be brought, then they used the word any. In other words, any circuit, district, or territorial court, on the chance that there was a plurality.
I've just remembered there must have been plenty of states with just one district court. Because if I remember correctly, Maryland still got one.
There are still states today that have only one district court.
Mr. Humphreys, what significance, if any, do you attach to the McFadden Act of 1927, authorizing national banks to branch and using the word establish with respect to branches?
Well, the Act probably could be used to make a distinction between the location and establishment of a bank versus the location and establishment of the various branches of that bank. But that statute has no effect on 12 U.S.C. 94. It has certainly not been amended by Congress. The federal cases that have considered the McFadden Act, have placed no importance on it to the extent that it somehow changes or affects 12 U.S.C. 94. Now, that statute was written at the time still in terms of the basis, we believe, of the county specified in the charter. And if for some reason located and established are now supposed to mean every place where the bank has a branch, then we have numerous other statutes. For example, the publication of comptroller's report shall be in the city or county where you're located. These reserve requirements, all of these topple like a house of cards, and instead of having one central county where all of these reports are published, the reserve requirements, suits against the comptroller of the currency, all of a sudden, these also take on a plurality rather than what we contend would be the single place where Congress originally intended for these activities to take place.
Is a branch a bank in and of itself? Does it have all of the attributes of a bank?
It may have all of the attributes of a bank. It may not. It may have the instant teller, and it may not be able to make loans, but it is permitted to have all of the attributes of a bank. I mean, the general business of the bank may
be conducted. Does it have its own president and board of directors?
A branch would not, no, sir.
Well, that's one of the important attributes of a bank, isn't it?
Well, yes, sir. I was directing myself to what the business they could conduct.
Well, the main office would not have its own president and board of directors. The president and board of directors
would be
for the
bank.
Main office and all the branches.
Right? That's correct. Yes, sir. The bank itself has a president and a board of directors. Each branch would have a branch manager, just like a division of a corporation. It is not a separate entity.
Mr. Humphreys, would you help me? You mentioned the fact that there are requirements that, such as publishing the amount of reserves or something like that. What is the purpose of a requirement like that? To inform people who do business with the bank what its size is and the like? What are the requirements you're talking about would apply all over?
Well,
maybe they should apply every place there's a bank.
Well,
I didn't quite get the argument.
All right. There are numerous other statutes, and some of them it might, in fact, be desirable to apply every place the bank has a branch. Publications of, as I say, directors' meetings and that sort of thing. And it might be that it is desirable for the bank to publish them not only in the place where it is located, as specified in the statute, but also all over the state, every place it has a branch. I would suggest, though, that it is that sort of argument that ought to be directed to the Congress and not directed to this court. Whether it is desirable policy for a bank to be sued everywhere, or whether it is desirable policy to have comptroller's reports published everywhere, is something we cannot answer.
Maybe Congress has already answered that.
Well, I don't think so, particularly with regard to the reserve requirement, Your Honor, because there it would seem like Congress certainly would not intend to create a confusion by using the word located to define the specific reserve requirements for a bank, depending on the county that it was located in, that is, whether it be a central reserve county or whether it be another county. By saying that a bank is located everywhere, then that provision becomes, becomes almost unmanageable, it would seem to me.
Well, I thought that the requirement only related to the place where publication had to be made rather than the content of the publication.
No, Your Honor, there are, as I say, I tried to summarize too quickly, and they're not cited in the brief, but there are about eight more statutes in 12 U.S.C., that were enacted in 1864. One of the statutes concerns the requirements for maintaining reserves. I mean, this is not a publication statute. And I don't want to suggest that that statute was necessarily passed in 1864, but the statute provides that if you are located in a reserve city, you will have a reserve requirement of X. If you're not located in a reserve city, you will have another reserve. That is not a publication. That actually directs you as to how much reserve you may have.
And in the state of Texas, a bank that's chartered in Galveston and a branch in El Paso, at the turn of the century, it would take you about 3 days to get there, wouldn't it?
At least.
And it would apply. Your statute would apply.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And as of today, that bank could publish it whatever they want in the Galveston Daily Paper is notice in El Paso.
Under all of these statutes, that would be correct. Yes, sir. In the few minutes that I have remaining, I would like to ask the court's indulgence to consider the waiver argument, because many state courts, having concluded that located and established refer to only one county, then turn right around and say, however, this venue requirement is waived by the erection and maintenance of a branch in another county. That argument is not founded on judicial precedent, and if the court would think about it, as I know it will, it occurs to me that never before in American jurisprudence have we decided that venue can be waived presumptively by pre-litigation conduct. The only case that even suggests that, if that sort of rule was adopted, every case that comes before a trial court, the judge is now going to be faced with an argument of he presumptively waived venue by some conduct inconsistent with it in advance of trial.
Well, what do you do about the Nirbo case?
Right. Nirbo was tread very lightly on this matter and was a very narrow holding, and it involved a corporation who specifically appointed a registered agent for service of process.
Which is pre-litigation conduct.
Right, but that was very narrow. That was they found express consent to be sued by the appointment of agent for service of process. And I would suggest that Nirbo can never be cited or used without considering Oberding, which was decided in 1953 by Justice Frankfurter, because Nirbo can be read too expansively or can be used too expansively without reading Oberding. Because in Oberding, the argument was made that a non-resident motorist passing through a state, and this was not a jurisdiction question, this was on venue. They had decided the constitutionality of the non-resident motorist statute. But a non-resident motorist was passing through a state, and for some reason venue requirements were not met because neither the plaintiff nor defendant were residents of that state. And the defendant asserted his venue right. And the court said, no, you waived venue because we've got our non-resident statute that says when you're passing through the state, you waive venue if you have an automobile wreck and you appoint the Secretary of State to receive process, although there no specific appointment was made. And Justice Frankfurter said that, but to conclude that a motorist who never consented to be sued has agreed to be sued and therefore waived federal court venue is to move in the world of Alice in Wonderland. In other words, that non-resident motorist had not consented expressly to be sued. There is no case that this court has considered other than Nirbo in which a pre-litigation waiver has been allowed. And in Nirbo, the court was very specific to say that it was because they had expressly appointed an agent for service of process and therefore had expressly consented to be sued. Now, what What the proponents of the waiver argument would seek now is to say that any act inconsistent with asserting venue that you do prior to trial will result in waiver of venue, such as erecting a branch bank. Well, I submit that individuals do things all the time inconsistent with the normal state venue right of to be sued in your home county. But no court has ever said that because you go to another, if you're an individual, and you go to another county and commit a tort, that you have waived venue. You haven't waived venue. If the statute says you have a right to be sued where you live, you do not waive that statute prior to litigation. And that is what we would contend this statute says, that the bank has a right to be sued where it maintains its home offices. Thank you.
Very well, Mr. Humphreys. Mr. Kovacic, you may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. I'm Mike Kovacic, and I think Mr. Humphreys has outlined to you the crunch of the matter, and it basically boils down to a statutory interpretation. And there have been decisions which are cited in the briefs from various lower federal courts and state appellate courts dealing with this question in recent years. These cases revolve basically around two theories of interpretation as far as holding for the position which I contend is proper. The first theory, and this was the one predominantly followed by the Georgia court, is the dichotomy in language between the words established and located. The ruling was basically that because of this dichotomy in language, once the bank set up a branch in a county other than its chartered county, if you want to use that term, that it was located there and could be sued there, and therefore in compliance with the statute. The second theory is that of waiver. That is, the act of establishing a branch bank in and of itself constituted a waiver. This is what Mr. Humphreys discussed when he said pre-litigation waiver. That is the basis of the decisions in some of the lower federal courts, which are decided in my brief, and in some of the state court decisions, which are also cited. But as I said, it revolves around this question of interpreting the statute. As to litigation in federal court, which is not really what we've got here, but it's been brought in for consideration and looking at the entire picture, I would agree with Mr. Humphreys that the established does mean that particular county. I don't know whether that's quite the case for state litigation, and I would not go so far as to concede that. But I think as some of these federal decisions have held, the establishment or the conduct of business, there were one or two of the decisions, and there's also a recent Florida appellate decision which dealt with the question of doing business. And this gets us in part as to what is required. Some of these cases have contained a recitation of, like the Reeves case, the 66 branches in the Southern District of California, and all of that, the volume. And this brings upon the question that Justice Rehnquist posed before in volume. You may not be aware that DeKalb and Fulton counties are border next to each other, and part of the city of Atlanta is located in DeKalb. I think that, as Mr. Humphrey's response to Mr. Justice Rehnquist indicates, a considerable portion of CNS's business by volume is in DeKalb and Fulton counties. I'm sure the business in DeKalb is several times what it is in Chatham County. And as to the question raised by Mr. Justice Blackmun about their using the courts in DeKalb, as pointed out in my brief, there was earlier litigation dealing with one of the loans that led to the unlawful redemption, as we have alleged in our petition. And there was litigation in regard to that filed by the bank in the exact court that this litigation initiated.
Are you suggesting that if a person goes to another state or another jurisdiction from his own and uses their courts, that that in and of itself draws him into the jurisdiction of that court for all other purposes?
No, I would not, Your Honor, Mr. Chief Justice. But what I'm raising here is the fact that besides using the court, the bank has established branches and is conducting active business and uses the courts as a part of conducting that business and has become a part and parcel of that county. And this leads into somewhat the point that Mr. Humphreys raised about does going to another county and committing a tort waive an individual's venue? And he said, no, it would not. And I believe that's a correct statement of the law. But many states, Georgia included, provide that a corporation can be sued in any county in which it commits a tort. You can sue a corporation in the county where the tort is committed, or in a contract matter where the contract is entered. So I think the courts have recognized different jurisdictional and venue requirements as to corporations. And
nothing ambiguous about that statute, is there?
No, Your Honor. I think that statute is fairly clear, and I think that situation.
When you talk about that statute, you're simply saying the Georgia legislature has, as a matter of policy, declared that to be so. We don't have that clear kind of expression here, do we?
No, we do not, Your Honor, and because of this court's decision in the Mercantile case, that is, holding that 12 U.S.C. Section 94 was not permissive, but was mandatory. That, therefore, preempts the Georgia statute for the determination of where CNS can be sued, and the determination has to be made under this statute.
Mr. Kovacic, I want to be sure about your posture. Do you feel that you could sue this bank in any county, state court of any county in Georgia where it has a branch, whether this particular transaction arose out of business from that branch?
No, I would not go that far, Your Honor. I would say that there has to be some connection to that county.
Why do you draw that distinction?
Well, I think maybe because in the back of my mind, I think of the Georgia venue statute as to corporations. That is, if you're going to sue a corporation over a tort or a contract, you have to have some connection to the county other than just finding them there.
Do you feel you could sue in Savannah? Is that Chatham County? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Well, of course, the bank is contending that Chatham is the only place
That's
we
right.
can sue.
Do you think you can sue there? So at least on your theory, you have two counties in which you could sue, Chatham and DeKalb.
Regardless of where the transaction was.
Well, under my theory, if there were no ties, no transactions, no part of these transactions in Chatham County, then the only way that I could sue there is on the fact that the statute provides a special additional venue.
Well, let me ask it again. On the facts of this case, on your theory, then, you can sue only in Chatham County or DeKalb County, not in Fulton?
That's correct, Your Honor, because I'm not aware of any transactions or any part of this entire matter which were conducted in Fulton County.
So you don't go all the way and say because there's a full-service branch in a county, whatever that means, that's banking terminology, that you can sue the bank in that county?
No, I don't. Now, I think some of the decisions referred to in my brief imply that you that possibly that is the case, that the waiver of the establishment of the branch, the knowing business decision to open the branch and all the ramifications that imposes, includes the right to be sued there. Now, some of these decisions, though, do contain the qualifying language or the limitation that there must be transactions that arose out of that. Otherwise, I would think the original purpose of the statute, that being to protect the banks, national banks, in their infancy at the time, from cumbersome litigation, would be thwarted. And I think, I don't know whether or not that is a legitimate purpose today, but assuming that it is, I think that that same purpose is accomplished by limiting the litigation to counties which have some connection. I won't say, here we were dealing with a series of four or five different actions, including two separate notes, and you know, the record does not show, and the way this case was involved.
Well, you confused me a little bit. I suppose I'm not tracking, but I thought you were approaching this initially on a basis of statutory interpretation.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then I'm wondering why you include the county of the branch of the transaction, but exclude a county where there's another branch and no transaction.
Well, as I say, Your Honor, I think some of the decisions do not.
I'm asking about you, not those decisions.
Well, I guess from the standpoint of the fairness aspect, I do that in my mind, that this could possibly be burdensome to the bank. And I think really fairness is one aspect that we have to consider in this.
Well, on that approach, don't you lose your construction argument, and aren't you forced to go on into a waiver theory?
Well, I think to a certain degree, and to me, thinking from the fact that to resolve this question, which has gone through extensive litigation in many courts recently, that this court's decision, or it might be desirable that this court's decision also address itself to the federal. And the only way to do that is on the waiver theory, because the dichotomy of language definitely does not exist and apply to the federal situation.
Well, what do you say located does not mean established? Is that your position?
Well, this, I think that is one theory of application. And I think that is the theory.
What would you say about a national bank that that exists in a state that has two districts in it, and it has branches in two districts? One is its home office, and another is a branch in another district. Where may it be sued? Let's assume that that the suit is brought in the district, federal district court, in the district where it has a branch.
All right.
But that isn't its home office. May it be sued there?
If you follow my contention that the establishment of the branch constitutes a waiver at least for transactions arising out
except
of this.
Except on the waiver basis, you would have to say that it could be brought in only one district, except for the waiver.
As far as the federal is concerned, yes, Your Honor. And this is why I think we get into the fairness question, and this touches upon the matter that Mr. Justice Marshall raised before in regard to the Galveston-El Paso situation.
Your suggestion is we just rewrite the statute in a fair way?
No, I'm not, Your Honor. I'm not suggesting that you rewrite the statute. I'm suggesting that you interpret the statute and you decide what constitutes a waiver of the prerogatives that the bank has under the statute. And I would contend to you that the establishment of a branch should be a sufficient act to constitute a waiver, at least as to transactions arising out of the conduct of business in that branch.
But where's the notice there? The bank doesn't get that notice. Where was the bank told that if they establish a branch, they will be subject to suit in that county?
Well,
you know, waiver is a knowing waiver.
I don't think that in that sense maybe that there was notice, Your Honor, but I think also in the same vein, if an individual, say in Fulton County, Georgia, goes into CNS to transact business with them, do they tell him, look, if this doesn't go the way you want and you decide you have to sue us, that you have to go to Savannah?
No.
I'm sure they do not. And so...
So if he goes into an ordinary corporation store, he gets the same thing, then.
Well...
It's the extent of the law, but you're talking about a waiver.
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Well, I say a waiver has to be knowingly made.
Well...
Wouldn't that apply? Wouldn't the bank have to... know that when they established a branch bank, that they were waiving this statute?
Well, I would think that it could be, I mean, you could argue, and I'm sure that would be the bank's position, that they must make a knowing waiver and they must be put on some kind of a notice. But I really don't know any way to put the bank on any type of notice as to what are the ramifications of establishing a branch bank.
How otherwise can you waive a statute?
Well, I think that going into that county assumes some ramifications of it. It's a knowing business decision, and I'm sure when they go in there, they don't know what the tax, they may not know what the tax structure or the tax rate is going to be, but they presume and know that they have to pay, they're going to have to pay some type of taxes. And as far as, you know, this point, it's
well,
hard to be.
One thing the bank knows is that the statute tells them that they can only be sued in Savannah. That they know. The statute says that.
Well, that is the interpretation that the bank has been operating under.
But now that's what the statute says.
Well, this is a question of statutory interpretation,
right,
Your Honor. Some courts, including state appellate courts and lower federal courts, have held that that's not what the statute means, because by the establishment of the branch, the bank waives venue. There are decisions on both sides of that. And in the fairness question, I think probably the most classic is the Helco case, where a New York bank had established a branch in the Virgin Islands, and the transaction and everything arose out of the activities of the branch in the Virgin Islands. Now, there, the Third Circuit's holding was that the individual had to go to New York to sue the bank. But there are other federal decisions, including one that crosses state lines, that hold that the establishment of the branch is a waiver. One where the bank was established in Camden, New Jersey, and the branch in Philadelphia. And the district court in Philadelphia held that the establishment there was sufficient action to constitute a waiver. Now, some of the decisions have looked at other business or the extent of business of the branches, but I think that it would be hard to write any definitive standards there.
Well, to put it strictly on fairness, what do you do where the bank has its office in Fulton County and a branch in DeKalb County? That's only a couple of feet.
Yes.
So how would your fairness work there?
Well...
You'd sue in either one, I guess.
I think probably as if that had been the situation as a matter of convenience,
yeah.
Since our office had been handling the litigation in a prior action, we might have gone down to Fulton. But
as a matter of fact, your office has a branch in Fulton County, doesn't it?
No.
Well, a lot of them do.
No, mine is a small suburban firm, Your Honor. But I think one other point that this deals with is each of the branches has a branch manager who is generally also a vice president, who can be an agent for service. And in fact, that's how service was perfected in this case, and how it has been in other cases. But besides the, you know, the fairness is an argument that is difficult to make. But I think the statute is subject to interpretation on either the basis of a waiver theory and for this court to definitively say what actions constitute a waiver. I would contend that the establishment of a branch in and of itself is sufficient. And the other, as I said, and this was the basis on which the Georgia Court of Appeals rendered its decision, is that by establishing a branch bank, the bank located itself in that respective county for suit under that court's interpretation of this act without getting into any waiver. But I think that on either application, that the motion of the bank, the original motion of the bank to dismiss, was properly denied, and I would respectfully request that this court affirm the decision of the Georgia Court of Appeals.
Mr. Kovacic, may I ask you a question? I think throughout the argument, both parties seem to have assumed that when a federal venue is sought to be established, the bank can be established only in one place, and that the branch would not be established within the meaning of the statute. Has this court ever so held?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think the reason that both parties have taken that position is, one, we have not gone into that aspect of it in as great a depth, because we are dealing with a state court issue. And secondly, the statute uses the word established in regard to the federal district, and as I understand it, the federal laws which set up the procedure for a bank, a national bank, being chartered, also use that exact term, established. And so from that, you draw possibly an intention to mean the same thing, and therefore you do get this home county aspect. But to my knowledge, as far as
there is no holding by this court that a branch of a national bank is not established in the county in which the branch is located. There's no holding by this court.
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument.